hours just walking around in the rain and trying to talk to strangers and approaching people, which isn't the easiest thing.
The thankless job of gathering petition signatures. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 3rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Chugiak residents protest a proposed landfill.
Putting a landfill in next to the park is just in concept, taking away from the asset that we've just spent, you know, millions of dollars on.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Salvagers have made progress recovering the sunken fishing tender Lone Star from the bottom of the Igushik River. The 78-foot vessel sank in a channel of the river on June 30th. KDLG's Mike Mason reports.
The 78-foot Lone Star sank in a channel in the Igushik River on June 30th. Ever since then, the efforts to recover the vessel have been hampered by strong tides and currents that have basically been burying the Lone Star deeper and deeper into the mud. However, quite a bit of progress was made in the recovery effort earlier this week. Petty Officer Sean Eggert is a spokesman for Coast Guard Sector Anchorage, which has been overseeing the recovery effort. He says Monday was a good day.
The salvage crews that are out on scene there in the Igushik River managed to get those chains wrapped onto the Lone Star and move it 200 feet towards the east shore of the river, where it's a lot more shallow. And from there, you know, once they're able to get it up into a shallow enough area, they'll be able to pump the water off, and they're going to need some hoses to basically push out all the mud that is accumulated inside the boat.
Once the water and mud are pumped off the Lone Star, the vessel will be inspected with the goal of making it seaworthy enough to be towed to Unalaska. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
If you want to get a proposition on the ballot, you're given a pretty gargantuan task. Not only do you have to collect at least 30,000 signatures from registered voters, you need to make sure those names come from districts across the state. So instead of relying on volunteers, most initiative sponsors bring in professionals. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez caught up with a paid petitioner who's working on the campaign to regulate marijuana to find out what goes into the job.
It's pretty safe to say that as a kid, Jared Spencer did not dream of talking to strangers about marijuana policy when he grew up. But a couple of years ago, he kind of came into it when he lost his job in Oregon.
I was in manufacturing and I'd gotten laid off. They shut the plant down kind of thing. And I was doing my unemployment and just I really wanted to work. And I seen this thing for OCTA.
That's the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act.
And they had a paid position, and I'm like, oh, a job. Okay.
Now Spencer is one of the half dozen paid petitioners working on Alaska's marijuana initiative, which could be on the ballot next August. There's a whole cottage industry based around every ballot proposition that gets introduced, with the same players often handling signatures for a different initiative or referendum every couple months. The pay isn't great. By law, you get a maximum of $1 per signature. But it's apparently enough to keep people like Spencer going.
It's hours just walking around in the rain and trying to talk to strangers and approaching people, which isn't the easiest thing, I don't think, for any of us, really, especially when you get denial after denial after denial and it's raining and it's getting dark. And if you're volunteering, it's a lot easier to give up versus if you're making a little something.
Spencer has been in Juneau for about 2 weeks. So far, most of the signature gathering efforts have taken place on the road system. But because sponsors want to hit a self-imposed goal of 45,000 signatures by December 1st, they're getting serious about other regions of the state. If you're walking around downtown, you'll be able to spot Spencer because he's the one carrying a clipboard that's covered in cannabis leaf stickers and wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, I got it all. Got all the rain gear on.
It's a pretty casual job. It mostly involves walking around busy streets, hitting up events, and hanging out in a designated area a couple of times a week. Still, Spencer wants to be professional about it.
I'd really like to have, like, business cards, especially with, like, some web address, some web information on it, or when I'd be at the library, those kind of things.
While some controversy surrounds just about every ballot proposition, Spencer says dealing with the marijuana initiative can be extra tricky. While similar propositions passed in Washington and Colorado last year, Alaska would be one of the first states to legalize marijuana for recreational use, regulate it, and tax it. Spencer says he doesn't target people based on how they look, but he will soften his approach in some cases.
If somebody has children especially, I'll just ask them if they want to sign a petition. Then I don't have to say that word. Because it is. It can be a real hot button with people. So
he says in those situations, he's had plenty of parents surprise him and not only sign the petition, but explain the whole initiative process to their kids. Actually, for the most part, he's had his expectations turned around. So far, the marijuana campaign is at 24,000 signatures, and most of the ones that Spencer has collected have come from people who don't have any interest in using it recreationally.
One of the reasons a lot of people sign it is for the money. They'd like to see the money in legitimate hands, and they'd like to see it taxed, that sort of thing. And other people, it's about personal freedom, and some people, it's just about let's vote on it.
And the people who have been angriest with him? Well, he says it's guys who are already growing and selling marijuana.
Here I am trying to make it legal to where they're not, even if they were in the field, they're not going to make as much money off of it. They're going to have to pay their taxes. They're going to have to hire employees.
Confrontations like that, along with lousy weather and low pay, make it a more difficult gig than one might expect. Spencer eventually wants to find other work. But for now, a job's a job. And at least this one gives him plenty to talk about. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Alaska's largest school districts lost more than 600 teachers and staff over the past 3 years. That's the conclusion of a report produced by the legislature's research department. The report shows that teacher, career, and guidance counselors or other education staff fell as student enrollment increased or remained flat. Teacher assistants, custodians, and other support staff took the biggest hits. In Anchorage, the number of teachers has dropped by 3% since the 2010 and 11 school year. The report was requested by Representatives Les Guerra and Harriet Drummond, both Democrats from Anchorage. Their caucus has been pushing for an increase in per-student funding, which has been kept at the same level for the past 4 years. Guerra and Drummond say this report shows the negative impact of not keeping classroom funding on pace with inflation. Governor Sean Parnell and Republican lawmakers have instead given one-time funding increases for energy, school security, and other out-of-classroom expenses. To take a look at the report, go to alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new nursing home in Bethel is allowing elders to stay in the community.
When you have love around you, it conquers all. All it amounts to.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents, encourage your kids to participate in the Healthy Futures Challenge at their school. It's free and a lot of fun. All your kids need to do is be active each week and keep a log of their physical activities. They'll feel great and get cool prizes, too. Go to playeveryday.alaska.gov to find out if your child's elementary school is participating. And parents, why not get out and play every day with your kids? It's great for the whole family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Residents of Chugiak are fighting a plan to fill a natural gully with debris from building demolition sites in the area. The landfill plan must pass muster before Anchorage's Planning Commission before it is reviewed by the Anchorage Municipal Assembly. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, a Muni Planning Commission hearing slated for next Monday could either stall the project or move it one step closer to reality.
Chugiak's Loretta French Park is a gem. It covers 130 acres of rolling green grass set beneath peaks dusted with the first flakes of winter. With fall's russet and gold leaves just beginning to show, the quiet park is a haven for bird watchers, joggers, dog walkers, even horseback riders. Maria Rance lives nearby on a mountain road winding up from the park.
That park is beautiful and highly used and highly valued. So I think putting a landfill in next to the park is just in concept right there, taking away from the asset that we've just spent, you know, millions of dollars on.
Rentz is on Chugiak's community council and heads Stop the Dump, a group of Chugiak folks who are fighting a plan that would allow Iklutna Incorporated to fill a gully on land the Alaska Native Corporation owns adjacent to the park with concrete, plastic, foam, or other non-recyclables from demolition projects. That's something Rentz and the Chugiak community council vehemently oppose.
It's of no benefit at all. I don't think it'll bring any local jobs in here. It's not scheduled to be a manned facility. It's just a, you know, their idea of monitoring is cameras.
And the noise. Even though a sign posted at the park's entrance says no dumping of any kind, belly dump trucks rumble through the park entrance before they veer off onto private land. We are in the park, looking out over a steep slope that declines onto forested land Iklutna owns on one side of the park's entrance road. The land at the foot of the slope is uneven and thinly wooded, then flattens out some distance away. Rentz says this is where the landfill will be situated, close to homes, a preschool, and a church community center.
It's not going to be lined, and if you actually walk in there, you see streams perking up out of the ground. You know, there's groundwater, you know, at the surface. I don't know how far we are above the aquifer. It fluctuates here a lot. You know, I don't think it's safe, and that's one of the concerns.
Iklutna has partnered with an Anchorage company, Central Recycling, to fill in 17 acres of its land next to the park with demolition debris. Under a master plan filed with the Anchorage Planning and Zoning Department, Iklutna could be allowed to haul in debris to the landfill for the next 30 years. Iklutna CEO Curtis McQueen says the Dena'ina people value water and that Iklutna has instructed its engineers, Dowell, HKM, to collect more data on impacts to the water table. McQueen will not say more until after the public hearing. Dowell planner Michelle Ritter also declined further comment. The City Planning Department's Erica McConnell says Iklutna's master plan covers 68 acres of land that the corporation wants to develop. The landfill itself requires a conditional use permit. She says the October 7th public hearing is a continuation of an earlier public hearing on the matter.
If they do approve the conditional use, it would be contingent upon the assembly approving the master plan.
There has been no determination on the master plan yet. If the commission gives the plan the go-ahead, Iklutna still needs approval from the Anchorage Municipal Assembly before any dumping can begin, because the native land is within municipality of Anchorage city limits. The public hearing on the issue is scheduled for Monday, October 7th at 6:30 p.m. at the City Assembly Chambers. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is the size of Ohio and includes more than 50 villages. The region's hub, Bethel, has 6,000 residents. Until now, families had to send an elder they couldn't care for at home to Anchorage, 400 miles away by airplane. That is until the first elder's home opened up after a decade of planning. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
This is just a standard room we have.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
Peter Achak gently holds his wife's hand, leading her into a bedroom of the new facility. Mary shuffles slowly beside him. She has dementia, and Peter takes care of her at their Bethel home. But he knows that one day soon, this could be her new home.
Means hope, means relief, possibly relief.
Over the past few years, Mary's been in and out of a couple assisted living facilities in Anchorage. Plane tickets cost around $400 round trip from Bethel and twice that from some villages. Ultimately, it didn't work out.
That wasn't good. I mean, they were good places, you know, but without family, she was just fading away.
In most places, residents would probably like the privacy of their own room. But in the Yupik culture, extended families often pack into tiny village homes. Liz Lee is YKHC's home care services director.
We know that in our culture, our elders live in multi-generational most of the time. And so you take them from their area of comfort and you put them in a single room. We thought that that could be an issue. So we thought of the hotels, how you can share a door with the next room, and if your roommate next door is okay with it, you can open the doors and still enjoy each other's company.
Lee has worked on the project for over 10 years. She says they gathered input from a team of elders who had specific priorities in mind for the design.
Things like the chapel, things like the colors of the region.
Lucy Jacobs was one of several local elders who attended the open house.
It will be of help to those who live alone and cannot care for themselves. That's why I'm grateful for this facility, especially for those who have no children to care for them. Thank you for building this. It's very nice to look at as well.
The structure of the building itself is different. There are 18 beds split into two main pods, which also contain large open living areas. The pod design eliminates the need for hallways. It keeps the atmosphere open and homey and allows staff to see a large space all at once. The place looks as expensive as it is. It cost $16.3 million to build, mostly from State of Alaska appropriations. The elders won't be paying out of their pockets to stay there. Most of them are Indian Health Services beneficiaries and will use that, along with Medicaid, to foot the bill. Barbara Jacobson is YKHC's chief nurse executive.
If we factor in the electricity and, you know, the everything, it would be probably about $1,000 a day. Most people can't afford that.
Most elders are from the villages in the region, some hundreds of miles away from Bethel. As the home's administrator, Jason Blaylock, explains, they will be able to use video conferencing through the village's health clinics to stay in touch back home.
So the family member can actually communicate with the villages in our clinics. So our clinics have the same video conference technology. So
families could go into the health clinic and
absolutely
video conference?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
New technology is everywhere. There's a computer system that tracks all the details of the residents' daily activities, including their diets. But it doesn't look sterile. The floor is special antimicrobial wood, and the wall protectors have real flowers and grass captured in their resin. Achak appreciates all the technology and features, but the real importance to him is being close to home.
When you recognize people and foods and cultural, it helps you way inside. And you remember way back in her head, you know, that she remembers a lot of things that she cannot express right now. When you have love around you, it conquers all that all it amounts to.
Construction of the project started in 2011. The ribbon-cutting ceremony was held September 27th. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Calling all Alaskan artists. Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
Juneau labor unions are criticizing a recent City and Borough of Juneau's Docks and Harbors Department decision to bid a contract for two new floating cruise ship berths without a project labor agreement. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
A project labor agreement, or PLA, is a deal between the owner of a project and labor unions, establishing terms for things like wages, working conditions, and benefits. While PLAs do not require the owner to hire a union contractor, they typically encourage them to use local workers and apprentices wherever possible. Pete Ford is president of the Juneau Central Labor Council.
You are hiring based upon local rates. You have a commitment to hire apprentices, and you're going to be hiring people who are right there in the community.
Ford last week wrote a letter to Juneau's Docks and Harbors Department asking it to reconsider a recent decision to bid a $54 million project for two floating cruise ship berths without a PLA. He says the move goes against a policy adopted by the CBJ Assembly in 2008, which says the city should seek to use the agreements to the fullest extent allowed by law.
Certainly in 13 years that I've been in Juneau, anything approaching $30 to $50 million has been a PLA project.
Courts have upheld the use of PLAs by public entities, though critics say they disenfranchise non-union contractors. CBJ departments review projects on a case-by-case basis to determine whether they need a PLA. The review looks at the complexity of the project, the amount of time it will take to construct, and whether an agreement would lead to cost savings or other efficiencies, among other factors. The city's law department does not review projects unless an agreement is challenged by PLA opponents. CBJ Ports Director Carl Yucatel says a review of the cruise ship dock project determined a PLA was not warranted.
It's a large dollar project, but 75% is pile driving, 20% is materials, and the remaining is electrical and pipe fitting work. So when you look at the complexity of the project, it does not lend itself to a PLA. There's not a lot of trades that are involved in this particular project.
Yucatel says local hire is not one of the criteria CBJ departments use when evaluating whether to use a PLA. And while he says not a lot of trades would work on the project, he's fairly certain the only prime contractors to bid on it would hire union workers.
The plant holders for this particular project, all of them are union shops. So we fully expect that the contractor that will be awarded this project will be a union shop.
But Yucatel thinks a PLA could limit competition.
I do know that there's non-union companies that are capable of providing subcontractor work that would be disenfranchised.
The Central Labor Council's Ford says he's concerned the lack of a PLA for the project will set a bad precedent for future city projects. And he disagrees with Yucatel's assessment of the project's complexity.
Putting a new dock in our waters is not a simple task. Getting it secured, and depending upon how you're going to secure it, requires some very, very skilled construction knowledge and abilities, and a job that you would want the best skilled tradesmen working on that you can possibly get.
Yucatel says the Docks and Harbors Board has no plans to reconsider the decision to bid the project without a PLA. The docks are being funded with local and state cruise ship passenger fees. Construction is expected to take 2 years, with the first berth ready for the 2015 cruise season and the second ready by summer 2016. Bids are due November 5th. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The U.S. Forest Service has decided to make changes in its Tongass Land Management Plan. That means users and interest groups will get to submit suggestions on road building, logging, stream restoration, and habitat protection. Costa Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The decision is no surprise to anyone who follows Tongass politics. The Forest Service is required to consider opening the plan for changes every 5 years. It usually does, but can choose to leave the document as it is. Agency offices are closed due to the federal government shutdown, so no one was available to discuss the decision described in a press release issued just before furloughs. The lengthy process concerns both advocates and critics of the way the Tongass is managed.
Once you open a plan and start changing a plan, everything comes to a screeching halt.
Shelley Wright is executive director of the Southeast Conference, which supports more logging and mining in the Tongass. The organization last month released its own Tongass management plan, which would remove some forest protections and allow more old-growth logging.
There is a silver lining, we hope, that the Forest Service will open their minds and their planning books and take a look at our strategy. A strategy that we feel is a good strategy for the environment and the economics and the social and cultural environment in Southeast Alaska.
You know, it's hard to conclude that the Forest Service is making good on its promise to rapidly transition out of old growth logging.
Austin Williams is Alaska Forest Program Manager for Trout Unlimited, which advocates protection and restoration of Tongass fish habitat. The group worries agency managers have set up too many timber sales in mature forests. Williams says that costs the government too much. He says the agency should do more to support the growing fishing and tourism industries.
There's really an opportunity right now for the Forest Service to help Southeast Alaska take advantage of this momentum and really start investing in the areas that really benefit Southeast Alaska.
The logging industry says it would be in better shape if it could access the timber promised in the current plan. Owen Graham is executive director of the Alaska Forest Association. He says mills and loggers have only gotten 20% of what was promised.
We weren't seeking a huge increase. We'd like to see a small increase in the amount of volume from what they have in T-Lump. But more than that, we want them to actually make changes so that they can implement the plan. But they can't implement the plan they have. So, you know, and simply reducing the volume to 20% of what it was isn't a solution either.
A Forest Service press release says the plan modification, quote, is expected to focus on identifying the timber base suitable to support a transition to young growth management. Trout Unlimited's Williams supports the change from old to young growth.
We have some concerns that the transition is dragging out longer than it needs to, but we are encouraged that the Forest Service is at least trying to move away from the large-scale old-growth sales and into young growth and other types of projects.
Tongass officials have already received numerous suggestions about changing its management plan. Those came during the process of deciding to open up that document. In a September interview, before the government shut down, Tongass supervisor Forrest Cole said he expected a lot more input.
I believe over the life of the current forest plan, we've probably looked at 30 or 40 different alternatives. And I'm guessing that we'll look at a wide variety again.
The Forest Service's press release did not include a comment deadline, meeting schedule, or overall timeline. And, due to the shutdown, no one could speak to those details. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mike Mason in Dillingham, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Ellen Lockyer in Chugiak, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, and Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Thousands of Alaskans have already gone through a home or commercial energy audit. These programs can identify ways to save a third on energy costs. For more energy and cost-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.